Welcome to Zion Freetown 230. I'm Natasha Leopold. A brief note before we jump into this episode. Many of the people involved in bringing this series to you have a personal connection to Zion Church, Wilberforce Street, and by extension to this podcast, these include myself, the producer Barbara, and Adrian of the African Curator. Same so with many of the voices you've heard so far. Echoing earlier words from Nigel Brown Davis, this journey, and indeed Freetown and the Creos, flourished through a plurality of early settler identities. Jamaican Maroons, who followed a few years behind the first tranche of Nova Scotians, thousands of liberated Africans from West Central Coast, Igbo, Hausa, Yoruba of Nigeria, people from Congo, and as far as Angola, ex-enslaved from the West Indies, and so on. As diverse culturally as they were in religious beliefs, being not only Huntingdonian, but Wesleyan Methodist, AME, Baptist, Anglican, Muslim, each preserves through stories, teachings, customs, and practices. A core spiritual root, though diverted, remains unbroken throughout their various passages. With the Zion Freetown podcast, we approach and access this 230th milestone through our personal and family histories, recognizing that many other individuals and communities are doing exactly the same. Zion Wilberforce Street and Freetown Central Circuit today represent as much plurality as they did over 200 years ago, with mixed congregations that could trace their ancestry to one or more early settler groups, Temne, Bulum, Mende, Shabra peoples of the region, or one of the various liberated African groups that in totality made up the majority of those early communities. You can find many publications celebrating the remarkable accomplishments of Black pioneers of the era, with names like Bishop Ajayi Crowther, David George, Raymond Sarif Eastman. We encourage you to seek out these stories, but also the other perhaps less voluminous accounts of individuals like Mary Perth, Dinah Weeks, Elizabeth Black, Mima Henry, Sarah Wilkinson, Ralph Henry, Harry Washington, or John Kissel. In the 230 spirit of owning, celebrating, and advancing our histories, we were intentional in approaching this series from points of personal contact. Again, quite aware of the very many laudable and erudite efforts of scholars, experts, and elder keepers of this often contentious history. For too long, much of the disenfranchisement and uphill battles our people faced in striving to obtain just dispensations under morally and legally binding contracts which were not honoured are still being fought today. From courtrooms to classrooms, from Harris Neck, Georgia to Hamilton Village, Freetown, from Hilton Head to South Carolina to Preston, Nova Scotia, many stories, one journey. This past March, an online symposium was held in the hours just before a vigil in Freetown in memory of departed kindred and ancestors. The One Journey Symposium did not offer a magic bullet or one solution to the various causes and arguments presented. They did not offer immediate relief from the realities on the ground. A weakened macroeconomy, a centralised stranglehold on Freetown's land use planning and building permit powers, devastating environmental degradation, unimaginable low health and education outcomes. What the event did offer was perhaps some timely and much needed perspective. A chance to celebrate, yes, but also to gather together under one virtual roof, professors, scholars, the erudite and the casually interested, a mayor and a former state senator, people from an array of Black societies, coming together to challenge and inspire, acknowledging the one root with its many branches. One Journey underlined the sheer expanse of Black people who once plucked from their societies in Africa have survived, forging new connections across North, Central and South America, the Caribbean, Europe and within Africa itself. A journey that invariably leads back to Freetown and Sierra Leone among other such points of return, as a beacon, a symbol of what is possible, even still. Episode 6, Canadian Connections, and the hashtag 1792 Project.
We will replace your shack for a new brick house, your wood furnace with oil heat.
Here in this place, blood moves through black veins, my blood. In this place, feet are tied and set in chains, my feet.
We will provide you with modern appliances, washer, dryer, flush toilet. We will replace your misery with hope. Just sign the deal and leave.
And so schools have been separated, and communities have been bulldozed, and churches have turned me away. Even love has been betrayed, and my gifts are allowed to fail.
You will become a new man. Jobs and education will be provided, and we will introduce cultural appreciation so that we can be close rather than divided. Sign the deal. Sign the deal.
The Canadian Connection in the One Journey story, it's very interesting, and it's actually the cementing piece of Centuri's effort of enslaved Africans breaking through the bondage of the Americans' enslavement and eventually returning to Africa in March of 1792 to establish the city of Freetown, which for a while became a beacon of a lot of the efforts of freedom, liberty, and self-determination. So the Canadian story in the middle of that is actually a cementing piece, and I believe it still has not been told fully. So the initiatives this 230th anniversary, it was an opportunity for different interests, different perspectives to come forward and tell this story. But what was very encouraging is that those of us who are direct descendants of the Black Loyalist and whose history remains unbroken and kept through the Zion Church community. I mean, having us come forward to lead that storytelling was also a game changer.
By 1784, well over 3,000 free Africans migrated to Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. They came from Virginia, Georgia, South Carolina, New York, and New Jersey, as well as parts of New England. The largest settlement was at Birchtown, near Shelburne, with an initial population of about 1,500. The people of Birchtown earned their living in fishery, cutting wood, clearing land, and hunting, and as domestic servants and day labourers. Other settlements were in Bringley Town near Digby, Preston, Birchtown, Guysborough County, Negroline, now Southville, Digby County, and Birchtown, Princedale, Virginia East, Graywood area, Annapolis County. A group of about 170 settled at Old Tracadie Road, Guysborough County. To learn more, consider reading James Walker's The Black Loyalist, The Search for a Promised Land in Nova Scotia and Sierra Leone, 1783 to 1870, and Robin Wicks' The Blacks in Canada.
So the story of the Black Loyalist has been told before in different ways. You have the historic volumes that James Walker produced, and Ellen Wilson, The Loyal Blacks. Those bring out the documented and recorded information to put some context about this effort of enslaved blacks making their way through Canada to settle in and form Freetown. There's also been, in recent decades, small texts coming from within the Black Canadian community telling about the stories to bring out very interesting facts. And if you take that, those set of informations, and you add to what we've been doing through the One Journey story and through the direct descendants in Freetown, through the celebrations of the 230th anniversary, Zion Church, and even the One Journey Symposium, you're beginning to see that we've set the stage for a perspective from within the community to grow and tell the full story. And I believe it's going to go that way. And the 1,196 souls, their stories will come out. And when it does, I believe it will now add, it will be that missing piece that will make a lot of Canadians of African descent very proud, because you will find those who fought for civil rights very early on, those who took on hardship but still created a community. And that exodus, from Canada, while it shows the resilience of the community to meet their objective for self-determination, it also leaves an unanswered question about the early viewpoints and formation in Canadian societies, especially in the Atlantic, which, if understood, explains a lot of what Black Canadian communities are facing today that we still read about, especially about land documents still unsettled 230 years later. The very fight that Thomas Peters, who's credited with settling the 1,196 settlers in Freetown, he was making the case for land 230 years ago. So I believe this effort has already began with the One Journey Symposium.
Multidisciplinary scholar, author, and artist Dr. Effa Cooper is a fellow at the Warren Center for Studies in American History, Harvard University. She is the principal investigator for a Black People's History of Canada project housed at Dalhousie University, where she teaches and holds a Killam Research Chair. Dr. Cooper was honoured by Maclean's magazine as one of the 50 most influential Canadians. A celebrated poet, in 2020, Dr. Cooper was awarded the Portia White Prize, Nova Scotia's highest recognition for the arts. She's also the winner of J.M. Abraham Atlantic Poetry Award for her poetry book, Black Matters. She was one of the One Journey panelists.
Those stories, when that she's curating, they will help in having a better understanding within the Canadian community of the role of early African Canadians in the formation of Atlantic Canada, New Brunswick and Nova Scotia especially. She's also called in her works for as a memorial at the in Halifax to commemorate this community. She's also drawn attention to the Maroons. That's another set of settlers that came through Canada and made the same decisions the earlier set made to go resettling in Freetown, Sierra Leone. And just going through her works, I felt it was that balance between the historical piece that you can get from reading James Walker and the community stories. I believe her work is providing that bridge. And so when I had the opportunity to introduce myself, which I did by contacting her colleague, Dr. Ishmael Rashid, who's my mentor, I was happy to receive an email reply from her, and we began a conversation. And I quickly realized she's always, she's been talking with Dr. Ishmael Rashid about how important it was for a symposium of the Black loyalists, but from Freetown. And I believe I could see the bridge she was calling for. And so that played an important role in us formulating the One Journey Symposium. We had it in mind, myself, Akindele Deka, to try and see if this story can be told holistically, instead of the silos that we perceive it's being told. And so when the opportunity came, this 230th year anniversary, I think we made a natural connection between the efforts in Canada and the efforts in Sierra Leone. And the One Journey Symposium has now informed us on what's possible in telling this story going forward. And so it's our hope that sometime down the line, by the 1st of August, which will be the second anniversary for the Canadian Emancipation Day, I believe we would have an opportunity to tell an even richer story with participation from all sides. I believe it can enrich both countries, and it can be a source of pride for both for communities that are connected to this story on either side of the Atlantic. That's our hope, and that's what we hope the One Journey story and symposium would bring forth.
My name is Dr. Afua Cooper. I'm a historian of the African diaspora and of Black Canadian history. I teach at Dalhousie University, which is in Nova Scotia, Halifax, Canada. I am also currently the principal investigator for a new project called A Black People's History of Canada. So let me situate myself a bit. Originally, I'm Jamaican. I was born and raised in Jamaica. I do have some links to Sierra Leone. On my mother's side, we are descended from Trelawney Maroons. And, you know, so there's that connection with Nova Scotia, Sierra Leone, and Trelawney, the Trelawney Maroons of Jamaica. I was actually born in Westmoreland, which is not Trelawney. Westmoreland is another parish, but some of the Trelawney Maroons during that conflict with the British had escaped to other parishes or fled to other parishes. And so my maternal ancestors had fled to Westmoreland. The family continued. So it's been a work in progress, my engagement with the Black Loyalist history, with the Black Loyalist story. So the thing to know is that Black history in general in Canada has been blacked out, has been wiped out. It's not something that's taught in school. It's not something that's braided within the curriculum. So you have this immense story where 1,200 people picked up and left Canada because of racism, because of colonial violence, and went to Sierra Leone. They would rather, you know, take to the high seas than stay in Canada and experience the the racism that they were experiencing. They left. They said, enough of this, we're leaving, and they left. This is not something that's chronicled in the social studies or the history curriculum in Nova Scotia or anywhere in Canada. Yes, some teachers may teach it, and you know, Ms. Suds is coming on and she can talk to that, but it's not something that braided within. You don't have to learn it. Even Black people themselves don't know it, more or less. So Thomas Peters was this extraordinary individual. He fought during the Revolutionary War. I don't need to go into that. That has been talked about. Where the British, you know, issued this memo, first with Dunmore of Virginia and then Clinton, where they issued this memo to African-American enslaved people saying, if you join us, you know, we're going to win the war, and after the war, we'll give you your freedom. You're free to settle, you know, in the United States, the 13 colonies, because they thought they were going to win the war, but they didn't win the war. So Thomas Peters was one of these thousands, actually, something like historians are now saying that at least 100,000 enslaved people fled to the British standards. And he was one of them. He was in the Cape Fear area of North Carolina. He fled with other people. General Clinton had ships in the Cape, on the Cape Fear River. And Peters, who was working as a millwright on the Campbell Plantation in Wilmington, Delaware, fled to Clinton's army. Served as one of the Black pioneers. This was a provincial corps that was founded by Clinton, by the British military, for Black people, for Black men. And Peters rose through the ranks in the Black pioneers to the status of sergeant. He became a sergeant by the time the war ended. We know he's a sergeant. There were another sergeant, Murphy Steele. Murphy Steele also went to Sierra Leone. So Peters was a black pioneer, and he fought with the British. Originally, before he endured enslavement in North Carolina, he was in Louisiana. We know that Thomas Peters originally came from Nigeria. He endured the Middle Passage. He was probably a Yoruba, endured the Middle Passage, ended up in Louisiana. So he probably spoke French by the time he came to North Carolina. His frequent escapes, or his escapes attempt, sort of inspired his Louisiana owner to sell him north, because he said, this guy just keeps running away. I can't deal with him. Let me sell him. So we find Thomas now serving as a Black pioneer. And at the end of the war, Treaty of Paris, 1783, the British military lost the war. So what did they do? Well, you know, some of the generals on the ground were humane, Guy Carleton, and they said, look, we made a promise to these people, we're going to keep it. If they had served in the military for a year or more, we will issue them certificates of freedom so they can leave New York or Charleston, South Carolina, or St. Augustine, Florida, because these were some of the points from which Black loyalists left to sail to Eastern Canada, or to go to the Bahamas or the West Indies, or the UK. Some of them even ended up in Germany, by the way. And so we have Thomas Peters' certificate, and it says that the bearer here of Thomas Peters, Sergeant Thomas Peters of the Black Pioneer Corps, has served His Majesty since the year 1776. So 1776 to 1783. So he's been in the military for 6-7 years. So, you know, this flotilla of ships left New York Harbor. British lost the war. They're evacuating their people. They evacuated something like 35,000 white people to Eastern Canada. There were these 3,000 and more Black people, including members of the Black pioneers and their families. And this is the rub, though. This is the rub. Many of the white loyalists were allowed to take their enslaved Africans with them. So you had free Black people like Peters and his wife, Sarah, and his two children, then Clary and John, going to Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. But you know, and some of those ships were also enslaved Black people. So that's kind of like the hidden story. So they leave, they go off to Nova Scotia, they arrive in Annapolis Royal in the valley. But guess what? The British reneged on their promise, the promise to give them land, rations to tide them over the time, clothing, blankets, so on and so forth. The whites got all of this. The promise was made for 3 years. Peter's people, like in Digby, which is on the north side of the province of Nova Scotia, they only got rations for 3 months, right? So in many of these communities, like Birchtown and so on, when you read Boston King's narrative, people are starving. People are starving. Some people even went off to sea as sailors, and they did the best they could. So the British really reneged on its promise. And then you had the white people in Nova Scotia who were viciously racist, who only saw Black people as slaves and wanted these free Black people now to be in this subservient position of slavery or indentureship or sharecropping. So Peter's engaged in a fight with many of his cohort, people like Murphy Steele, I mentioned, they petitioned colonial governments, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick. He crossed back and forth. He rallied the community. And finally in 1790, after 6-7 years of residence in these two colonies, the people there sent Peter's to England, to London, to plead the cause, to say to the king or the king's representative, hey, we have been tricked. Not only have been tricked, but they have reinstituted slavery in Nova Scotia. They're kidnapping many of our people. There are race riots. They have burnt down our communities in Birchtown and Shelburne. For example, they have instituted these anti-Black bylaws. So they were under surveillance and their lives were circumscribed in so many ways. Whilst in London, Peters met with his old commissioner or his old captain, George Martin, who introduced him, hooked him up with General Clinton. General Clinton, if you remember, was a general under whom he served in when they were campaigning in the former 13 colonies. And Peters presented a petition. He also met Granville Sharp, and he met members of the London's Black community. And he presented a commission to the petition to the Secretary of State, Grenville, and then later on Dundas. And basically he said, you know, things are awful. The governors on the ground in Nova Scotia have really been discriminating terribly against our people. We wish to leave. The Sierra Leone Company was forming at that time, the former St. George's Company was forming. It was agreed on that those in Canada who wished to leave would go to Sierra Leone. So this is how this arrangement was made. So Peters travels back to Canada. They also sent John Clarkson, the younger brother of Thomas Clarkson, the famous abolitionist, to lead the exodus, which became a source of conflict because Peters was the one doing all the work, the groundwork. And then they send this young 27-year-old guy, Peters was about, you know, almost 54. They sent John Clarkson to lead the exodus. He doesn't know Nova Scotia, doesn't know the people, but he's white and he has the force of the British, of the imperial authorities behind him. So anyway, Peters goes back, he organizes communities in both provinces. Clarkson went down to Shelburne and Birchtown. So Thomas Peters, we see him as a Black power advocate, a civil rights leader, a one who resisted slavery in so many ways, resisted slavery, resisted racism. You see, he had agency, he and his community. Peters was a community builder and a community advocate. When we think of Peter's role in history, I think of him as a Black Atlantic revolutionary who was instrumental in the Black freedom movement in at least 4 countries, in Canada, in the United Kingdom, in the United, what became the United States, and of course, in Sierra Leone. So that is, you know, on the day Thomas Peters died, suffice it to say, we all know this story, when the Black Loyalists from Canada arrived in Sierra Leone, again, the British reneged on their promise. The whites, John Clarkson, wanted to rule in an autocratic way. And, you know, Peters went at him head to head. And Peters died. He died from malaria shortly after he arrived in Freetown. But others took up the cudgel. So here is a document, or part of it, of the Beaverhood petition. Henry Beaverhood presented this petition to Clarkson on the same day Thomas Peters died, June 26, 1792. So I'm saying, did Peters have a hand in crafting this petition? And Beaverhood is saying, we wish to be governed. We want to be part of the government. You promised this in Halifax, you promised this in London, that we were going to be part of the government, not to be discriminated against once we get to Sierra Leone. We couldn't get the land, we're not part of the government. So others took up the cudgel, like Henry Beaverhood and Isaac Anderson and Harry Washington and John Kissel and all those folks. So I linked Peters and all those folks, you know, to the Black Atlantic Revolutionary tradition. Here's an image of the last battle of the Haitian Revolution called La Bataille de Vertière, the Battle of Vertière, which was the battle that the Haitian people kicked out the French from the island. And in fact, as many of you know, the people like Clarkson and Wilberforce were describing the Nova Scotians or the Black Loyalists as Jacobins. You know, it's as if they were born and trained in Paris. So we know that they had this revolutionary spirit in them. And the whites, John Clarkson and his colleagues, did not like that. They wished them to remain subservient. So these are, you know, some of the identities of Thomas Peters. And I'm happy to say that I was in Freetown in 2013 and took a picture there at the base of Thomas Peters' statue. I did not know this celebration was going to happen, but it is wonderful. And I'm going to end there. And I thank you all for your kind attention. And happy birthday, Freetown. Happy birthday to you all. And let's do this again.
Lindsay Rock's book, Amazing Black Atlantic Canadians, shares interesting and inspiring facts of presence and contributions of West Africans in Canada that predates Champlain's founding of Quebec City, one of the earliest permanent settlements in 1608. For example, Mathieu de Costa from the Benin Empire in present-day Nigeria, who worked as an interpreter for French, Dutch, and Portuguese traders and explorers along the African coast. Mathieu is commemorated on a Canadian stamp at a historic museum in Nova Scotia, has a school named after him in Toronto, and streets named after him in Montreal and Quebec City. Another individual, Marie-Marguerite Rose, originally from Guinea, after a period of indentured servitude with a French naval officer and his wife in Louisbourg, goes on to make a life for herself, becoming a business owner in 1755 of a tavern on the corner of Saint-Louis and Place d'Armes building in what was then New France.
The Black Loyalist story is just one component of the early African-Canadian story and contribution. There are others. If you'd like to get a feel of it, you can always start with the historical text by James Walker and Alan Wilson. But then if you want to get a feel of the community stories, then you want to go into look for the text by Stephen Davidson that did the Black Loyalist in New Brunswick. You want to do also Sharon Johnson, who spoke about the history of blacks in Yarmouth, Nova Scotia. There is also even from the Baptist Church, there is a brief history of the Colored Baptists of Nova Scotia and their first organization.
The hashtag 1792 Project was born from an art installation for Halifax's Nocturne Festival in October 2021. The installation is called Message in a Bottle, 15 Ships to Sierra Leone. Catherine Winkler, who coordinated the installation, said in an interview on Canada's CBC Radio, quote, "It is the greatest story untold from my view." The letter writing project that emerged is meant to create personal connections centuries later between present-day Nova Scotians and the seafarers who left. At the time, she had received 92 letters from politicians, community members, educators, and students across Canada. It really is a story of a community of resilience and a community of failure. And that was a bureaucratic failure, Winkler went on to say. Karen Hudson, principal of Auburn Drive High School, took up the challenge, embarking on an endeavour that harkens back to the likes of Kata Perkins, David George and Thomas Peters. Channeling the power of the pen, rediscovering the potential to right the wrongs in history.
So good afternoon and thank you. And I also wanted to say congratulations on the 230th anniversary of the exodus of the Black Loyalists and the anniversary in terms of going to Freetown, Sierra Leone. And we're very privileged to be part of this celebration. It's a part of connecting to our history, to our rich history. And this shows the strength that we have across the diaspora as well as within Africa. And so today I have some young students here that what we want to do is talk about the hashtag 1792 project. And it began with a message in the bottle in September. And what we were aiming to do is to make sure it's just the beginning. So it was the beginning of how we could tell a story that has not been told. And how could we make sure that others knew about this deep history that has been left out of our curriculum, that hasn't been written in. And so we wanted to make sure that we could engage not just ourselves, but also young students within the educations of Nova Scotia, across the province, so that they could take part and learn more about the Black Loyalists of 1,196 individuals who left on 15 ships. And some of the students have never heard about this. They heard about the migration, but they haven't heard about individuals getting on, Black Loyalists getting on and leaving this province of Nova Scotia because of contracts that were broken, promises that weren't kept, unemployment, racism that what Dr. Fui spoke about earlier. So what we did is that we made a presentation to the Executive Council in December, and we came on board. They actually did some proclamation where Carol will speak a little bit about that, but through Catherine Winkler, introduced us to this project in terms of 1792. We decided to call ourselves that so that we would never forget the year, this important year of when the Black Loyalists left to go to Sierra Leone. And then we want to tell why they left and the conditions that they endure here in Nova Scotia. And so we began on this journey, this educational journey to fulfill our mind, and to make sure that we gain knowledge and that we share this knowledge and this story, this rich story across the province. And so I wrote one of the letters as the principal of Auburn Drive High School. I wrote a letter, and then from that letter at a meeting there, I decided that this would be something else that we need to get the students involved as well. And then through that, we decide that we want to make sure that every seafarer that left would receive a letter. And so the letter was basically just talking about my experience, but also, you know, how the seafarers who left, what were some of those conditions, you know, trying to understand, you know, that they left this land. And then also to talk about what happened here, what is still happening here in regards to racism or systemic issues, and then to talk about their resilience, and that talk about the spirit of hope, and then to create that hope within them so that they would understand that from them as our ancestors that we continue on to live out their legacy. and that we want to pass it down to our children. And so I will now call on one of our students, Zay, who's going to actually read her letter, because what our goal is to do is that even though we're here in Nova Scotia, Canada, and Freetown, Sierra Leone is having a celebration, we're celebrating with you, we want to extend that branch so that way we could have letters actually go from Nova Scotia to Sierra Leone and then maybe have an opportunity to connect somehow where folks from Sierra Leone can also write to us as well, and we could write to them. But then we also created, can you pass me that, the book of letters. And within this, we're documentary, the anyone who actually decides to give a letter to put their names down. So their name is going to be written within this book of letters. And this will become part of the history as well. And through all of that, then individuals can see their name that would be written down and placed in probably, hopefully, the Maritime Museum within Nova Scotia, but they will become part of history.
Dear Black loyalists in Sierra Leone, the British were badly outnumbered and were in despite need of people for the war. With that being said, they offered you freedom and land if you fought the Americans on their behalf. As you were jammed on a three-month-long boat journey, watching your people die from starvation, illness, and being tortured, how did you survive that? Over 30,000 of you escaped to join the British. Even with that, you still face hostility, racial segregation, locating jobs, and inequality when arriving in Nova Scotia.
So Zay is a grade 11 student here at Auburn Drive High School, where I'm the principal here. And that was one of the tasks that we actually want them to do, is to write a letter to begin part of that educational journey. We feel that this is a wonderful opportunity for our students to be able to speak about what they feel is happening here today, so that what would they tell the seafarers who had traveled across those waters? What would they say to them? What do they want them to know about what they're encountering right here? Another student who's going to read her letter, Samira Hudson-Ash, and she's also a grade 11 student as well.
To a Black loyalist headed to freedom, I'm writing to you as you aboard the Morning Star. Is there fear running through your veins? Can you feel your heart beat through your chest? Are you hoping for the best but preparing for the worst? I know you are anxious. I cannot imagine traveling that far away from your family. I hope your journey to Sierra Leone will be safe. I would say we would have come far because of your austerity. We still have a long way to go, and we are stronger for that. I think about my little cousins and wonder if they will endure the same racism that exists because of the color of our.
I think that one of the things that Dr. Fula spoke about was that we have this rich local history that is not being taught within our school, and that our students need to know about their connection and about the motherland. And just to hear about the ongoing celebrations that are happening within Freetown, Sierra Leone now, it actually thrills my heart, you know, to go back to the motherland and to be part of such an event and to be part of history. And so this is a way for our young children to actually address inequities and to speak from, you know, from their heart of what they see, and a way for others to listen, but also to take action. And which is very critical in terms of what we do, that we need to be mindful that we're impacting the lives of young people. And so this is a way to carry on the book of letters and to carry on the legacy and the history of the stories.
During the vigil in Freetown, Adrian read Karen Hudson's letter to the seafarers, in which she says, "As I write this letter, I think of our life in one of the 52 Black communities. We were able to settle on the land that we later found out did not belong to us. We took this land and made it our own. To see us now, the way we're living. You would be impressed, even though we still encounter racism and other inequities. We are all free. The tenacity of our elders is formidable. They carry wisdom, traditions, respect, and the oral history of our people. I am proud to grow up in the Preston area. It is my foundation and my strength. I cannot wait to hear your story of Sierra Leone.
Radio Democracy, begin look inside concern them, where they come out from different political party them, where they in opposition, but the way how the police don't arrest them, because they think say, then they talk to them, where they go against government. Wednesday, March 23rd.
Like it or not, you for join. Better, me no mix pan or damn pet. Push sober, coconut, do not know they blow pan full fat. The people where really they suffer, they no get phone for go Facebook. Advocate for democracy, we don't buck on Facebook. I wish say, na so if I don't get be, where the other one, them get the mud in Maria. By their fruits, we shall know them. The mud in Maria, all the puss in the boots, we shall know them. Anyone wake come go on some we then just say we not go not.
We had to fight for water and proper sewer, even though the watershed is in the Preston community. These amenities did not come easy. There were individuals and black organisations such as Black United Front, it does not exist anymore, but it fought for black Nova Scotian rights. Then there was the church. Most of us went to one of the Baptist churches in our community. During the early years, we were taught in the local church until we were able to attend the local schools within our communities. There are still issues within the education system. Progress is being made, but we have a long way to go. There are lots of organisations such as the African United Baptist Association, Black Educators Association, Ratepayers Association, to name a few, that were developed to address the inequities in our society. These organisations fought for justice, better education, proper housing, and culture. The church was, and still is to most of us, a place where we go to worship. It also provided much of our leadership, since blacks were not in key roles of power. We go to church and have community leaders. We are a vibrant people, and we felt safe and valued through the church.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Kusha, everybody. I want for me to say, I get a letter from Nova Scotia, but this letter, which make us special, now the one day we not be camp and the boat, we be left. Now they write with today after 230 years. So then guess nothing nice for telling her. We're not principal of the school, but one of the community, we been left and we managed for TINAP. And another one, students, 9 students, right? But we get the pleasure for make another student here in a salon read the letter from the student. And we make special for the student, now the granddaughter of the historian, the exemplary historian, Akintola Wise.
Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Adeola Wise. Well, I'm here to read the letter from a student abroad. I wrote this to you in the future of your time to explain just how thankful we are.
We hope you'll join us next time for our final episode. Till then, thank you for listening
for your
and goodbye.
Sacrifice and he has spent to ensure our culture's success. Although you were promised land and more, it was unfair how they lied to you. But beside that, everything that she did developed the great communities we call our homes today.
Dear Black Loyalists, I wonder what it was like for you to travel for months on a boat to Sierra Leone. I can't imagine how hard it is to restart your life in a new home, building new houses, finding food and water, and meeting new people. I hope you had a safe journey to Sierra Leone and are starting a better, more free life in Freetown. Sincerely, Quentin.
To the boy aboard the Morning Star, I wrote this letter to you years ahead of your time. Despite all of the horrible things you and our people were put through, your sacrifices and hard work have done a lot for us in the future. You built communities, families, and legacies. Even today, your legacy still lives on in communities like Afriqueville, North Preston, East Preston, Cherry Brook, and Uniac Square. With so many years gone by, so many things have changed, although there is something that still remains the same, the distortion of the young black mind.
To our daughter on the Sierra Leone, as you are departing on a boat along with 1,190 other people, I'm sure a lot is going through your mind. What are you going to eat? Where will you sleep? When will you arrive, and most importantly, what will you do with your little baby? I hope you're able to fish on the boat for any food you need, and ration your portions so they're able to last the whole time. Not only for your sake, but also for the little baby you are carrying. Hopefully they make it out okay. Maybe someone on the boat will be able to help you when it comes time to deliver, and you will be able to find enough resources to support them.
For you to grow up as a child and to see your people being killed, starving, poor, being treated as less than, must have been extremely damaging to your mind. I assume that it greatly affected and altered your outlook on life and concept of equality. You probably wondered, why do people that look like me get treated like this, and what's wrong with us? Although the reasons for this type of thinking were to a greater extent back then than it is today, black children still struggle to find peace of mind about themselves in today's society. Throughout a lot of our education years, we are only taught white history. I personally only started learning about our history in grade 9. We still see our people getting killed. The only difference is now they just try to justify killing us for no reason.
Dear Black Loyalists, on the ship I know it was not fun or fair that you were used in war. You should have got your good land, and you probably were scared fighting in the war for 7 years. For a not good land that you had to leave Canada to freeland on a boat. Good luck with your boat trip in the winter. I can't believe that you did it in the winter. You were probably wet and cold, but you made it and I'm happy for you, and you were so brave in the war on the boat.
Dear Black Loyalist, I truly believe what you went through is wrong, being lied to about jobs and property. How did it feel being betrayed because of the color of your skin? Racism is wrong. Even today, racism still exists, which it shouldn't. People are risking their lives just so they can live longer and have a better life. But you were so brave to not stop because of the unfair treatment, such as being judged by the color of your skin. Racism is wrong. There is no reason racism should exist. Sincerely, Carson.
Dear Luke, I hope you get this letter. I sent it through the vast and cold ocean. I sent this in January 20th. The cold is following you out to sea. I can only imagine the terrible conditions, the cold, the crowded deck trying to stay warm. Thinking about the end of the long journey you will have, your own land, your rights, and your dignity. You have my luck with you, and I wish I could come and be free with you. What they did to all of us is not right. From Freedom.
We will miss you and all your wisdom you've left behind, and we hope everything has worked out for you. We heard that the rumors of your boat being in bad shape and that it was out of repair, but we were hoping you weren't affected. They said the damage was little to none, so that is always a good sign. Now we've heard you've arrived and are hoping it was safe for the both of you. We know the people sailing the boat only had good intentions to help you and relocate you to Sierra Leone, but it doesn't make it any easier. As your parents, we only want what's best for you, and if you think this was the right choice, we will only support you. Please stay safe and write us back when you have a chance. Love, your mom and dad.
We are taught that our biological features are not up to the world beauty standard, and we are taught that in certain places it's not appropriate to express our rich culture. We as black children are taught to hate ourselves. This is the reason why I'm writing this letter to you. To go through so much at such a young age, and to fight till the very end, I believe that we can learn a lot from you. We can learn a lot from how black loyalists like you lived your life. In some ways, we can learn to love ourselves. Sincerely, Zion.
Now there is a pandemic that started in 2020 and it is 2022 and a lot of things got locked down and now people are learning about the Black Loyalists in school and outside of school. By Jemaya.
Now in 2021, many Loyalists are living in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. You helped create heavily influenced politics and culture in Canada. All of your families deserve to be heard and known worldwide. You fought for the British and never received what you risked your life for. Sincerely, Zay, a fellow Black Loyalist.
I would say we would have come far because of your austerity. We still have a long way to go and we are stronger for that.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours.
Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory. It's all done.